You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Executive pay has come under the spotlight in the face of the COVID-19 pandemic. Companies are focusing on new approaches to deal with executive remuneration. Many companies are relooking their pay packages with a critical eye, especially increases and incentives. But fortunately, the pandemic has also seen many companies doing the right thing, directors and senior executives announcing pay cuts during the heart of the lockdown. And we've also seen cancellation of bonuses, supporting charities like the Solidarity Fund, and freezing of incentives. PwC released the 12th edition of its Executive Directors Practices and Remuneration Trends report today. It's the go-to guide when it comes to executive remuneration in the country. And we're joined now by Leila Ebrahimi, who's a director in PwC's People and Organization Division. Leila, great to have you on the show to talk about the findings. It's 97 pages. It's a dense report. And we'll try and do it a little bit of justice in the short time that we have together. But we'll definitely focus on this in greater detail in a panel at some later stage. This year, if you look at the headline finding, and I know it's a big issue in a country like South Africa with our high levels of inequality, but the finding for me that really jumps out is the study that you've done on what is the correct ratio to tease out what a living wage should be. And the figure you've arrived at is 11,300 rand. Just share how you arrived at that sum.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Michael, and hi to your listeners, and thanks for having me. So yeah, that's actually my favorite article and my favorite study that we did, and I just found that absolutely fascinating. And how we arrived at that was we asked ourselves the question, you know, it started off with, what do you do when your CEO is overpaid? Because we know the criticisms of benchmarking, and I don't want to get into that right now. That is a big topic all in itself. But the question we asked ourselves was, you know, if your CEO is overpaid, what do you do? And then we said, well, hang on a second. When is your CEO overpaid? And what does it actually mean to be overpaid? And that led us down the path of saying, you know, what is the correct ratio? Because I'm sure, you know, many of your listeners will be aware of the proposed amendments to the Companies Act that haven't yet formally been gazetted, but we anticipate them to be fairly soon, which say that there needs to be mandatory disclosure of the gap or the ratio between the lowest paid worker and the highest paid, which is most often the CEO. And so we said, you know, what would that ratio look like? You know, what would an appropriate ratio look like? And famously, you know, Peter Drucker is out there with his 1 to 20 or more recently 1 to 25. And we said, okay, well, let's use that as a starting point. That is the most often quoted. That's the kind of classic principle. Let's use that. And let's take a median, you know, obviously our study and where this report is now, the 12th edition, where it came from was us actually looking at JSC executive director pay. So, you know, we took the median JSC executive director pay, which sits, CEO pay actually, which sits at about 5.2 million thereabouts. And we said, okay, we need to also take into account tax, because obviously tax is very different at different levels of income. So if we take that to a post-tax median total guaranteed pay, we get to somewhere around 2.8. And then we said, within South Africa, we have this national minimum wage, and obviously, you know, there are criticisms against it. If we were to contrast those two points on a post-tax basis, what does the ratio look like? And I want to emphasize that this was done only on a fixed pay basis. Why did we choose to go that route? We chose to go that route because variable pay is obviously, it's in the name, it's highly variable. It changes a lot from year to year, but also it's anchored off of fixed pay. So we thought, let's first get fixed pay right. When variable pay anchors off of that with the appropriate percentage of fixed pay and with appropriate maximums, then, you know, that can be a secondary kind of investigation. But also, in terms of, I just lost my train of thought there. In terms of why we only use fixed pay, it's very difficult to compare variable pay in years where performance has been great and where performance hasn't been great. It's not supposed to pay out where there hasn't been performance.
That's why it's variable,
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it seems simple and it seems obvious, but it isn't always obvious and it isn't always the case. And then we get into the debate about retention payments, which I'm not going to get into. But nonetheless, so fixed pay on a post-tax basis, national minimum wage compared to the median CEO pay on a post-tax basis, which I talked about, got us to 66 times. And we said, whoa, that is not anything like, you know, the bracket or the 20 to 25 range. bearing in mind that Drucker principle is an average worker ratio. Here we are literally using the minimum. So we said, okay, let's go into the PwC database and let's actually investigate what does an unskilled median look like. So in other words, from our database, if we look at all the unskilled workers and we look at a median of their pay and what they're being paid, what does that ratio then start to look like? And then we thought, and then we saw, interestingly, 24 times. And that fits very neatly, coincidentally, into that, that 20 to 25 ratio that we were looking at. Taking it a step further and saying, you know, what was the semi-skilled median, we got to a ratio of 18 times. And I think that emphasizes the very obvious point that we need to upskill our labor force to address income disparity. But it also, as you quite rightly said, indicates that the living wage of, you know, around 11,000 monthly is actually what we should be looking at if we want to adhere to principles like the Drucker principle. And there's a lot of research that's been done into that, which we don't have time to go into, that say, you know, that that is the right ratio to be looking at for everything to function smoothly.
It's an important conversation in a country where we're discussing things like a basic income grant or universal income at a much lower level. But all the studies show, the Taylor Committee report show, that the economic spillovers from putting money into the hands of the very poor and indigent in society is spent in the economy. It's very rarely saved, and these are positive economic multipliers. So one mustn't just inherently look at things like basic income or national minimum wage and say that they're only negative or handbrakes or adding costs. There's a broader conversation to have here. Now, obviously, with all the damage done by COVID-19, I think turnarounds are the other very interesting area that you focus on in this report. They're going to be the order of the day, one thinks. How should boards and REMCOs approach how they structure and appropriately incentivize these sort of turnaround strategies?
Turnaround incentives are always going to be controversial. And I hesitated before putting this article in because nobody likes them. But what we're trying to emphasize here is there is a time and a place for a turnaround incentive. And as long as it's appropriately structured, and I think the principle that we always come back to is there should never be payment for failure. There should always be payment for performance. But what we're trying to say, you know, not only in this turnaround incentive article, but in some of the other places within our report is, we need to interrogate now, post-COVID-19 and in these recessions that we're facing, what does performance mean? Performance doesn't always mean aggressive growth. Sometimes it means protection or safeguarding value. And that's an important conversation that we need to have because whilst investors or shareholders might say, you know, we need aggressive value creation for us, they are not the only stakeholder. And we've been talking about that for a long time. But I think with COVID-19, you know, those trends have really been accelerated. And suddenly everyone's a lot more understanding that, hey, you know, employers are a big stakeholder group. And we actually need to take their interests and their accounts, their interests into account. But also in the turnaround environment, you know, lenders become a very important group. Mm. And typical long-term incentives are purely designed to look after shareholder interests. And we know that's important. But isn't it time that we took a kind of definitive step away from shareholder primacy and said, you know what? It's time to move on. It's time to actually look at things other than just shareholder value creation. Those things are important. But we also need to look at, you know, ESG comes into this conversation as well. The social factors, the environmental factors, the governance factors. So it's not just in a turnaround environment. I mean, everybody seems to be in a turnaround environment at the moment, but we're asking the question, you know, what do we need to do about the structure of pay? And there are some, you know, ideas out there that the structure of executive pay might look different. It might become something more like restricted shares instead of performance shares. I don't necessarily believe that that is going to be true. But what I do believe is that performance conditions, so, you know, typically we'd look at a total shareholder return or return on equity or things like that, these performance conditions and the targets associated with them, they need to be looked at differently. And we need to bring in other targets that speak to stakeholders other than the shareholders. And I think there's definitely a growing acceptance of that.
And this certainly helps the board in those conversations, because I think very often the board finds itself as the ham in the sandwich here between shareholders and lenders, especially when things are shaky. I think on that note, Leila, there was so much more that I wanted to get stuck into, but that's all the time we have for thanks for sharing a brief snapshot into this year's report, which really highlights some of those challenges facing South Africa's and Africa's executive directors when it comes to turnarounds and executive remuneration. Leila Ebrahimi, Director in PwC's People and Organization Division.